from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
We're talking with Jason Munns, of course, Tiger basketball writer for the Commercial Appeal. You can go read his work over at commercialappeal.com. One such work includes grading the additions from this offseason. And I'm not going to go through line by line with every guy, but I think the thing that's kind of striking to me is maybe the demeanor that Penny has had, because you can make a case this has been a very good offseason. I mean, I know everyone can kind of nitpick, or maybe some people go, I don't care about the offseason anymore. Like, show me what happens during the regular season. But I think the thing that I'm struggling the most with is, if indeed this has been a good offseason, why kind of this weird air around the program? Or am I projecting too much? Because that's kind of what has struck me. Because I'm not someone that's like looking for the negative. It's just like they had to clearly overhaul the roster. That's not an easy thing to do. Everyone can have their quip or whatnot, but they did overhaul the roster, and there's a legitimate case to be made that this is the team to get them back to the tournament, but there just still seems to be kind of this weird atmosphere surrounding the program.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably a multitude. I think it's probably multiple things. If I had to guess, though, probably the two biggest reasons why things have been so different this offseason are probably the direction things went at the end of last season.
Yeah.
It was unpleasant for everybody involved. And I think Penny probably is still, whether he's upset or hurt by things that were said in the media or things that fans said, I think there's some of that at play here. It's his prerogative to handle his business how he sees fit. And it seems like this is what, this is part of why he's decided to go this route. But I think the other thing is maybe he's just gotten maybe he's over the whole, talking things up so much.
Yeah.
Every year it's been, this is how I would rate this team. He gets a lot of questions where you know, he's answering honestly in the moment, and then sometimes it turns around and
it's used against him,
Yeah, people use it against him later. And so I feel like between the two, that's probably why things are the way they are. But, you know, to your point, like, there's nothing really to grumble about. There's no, based on the work that he has done and his staff has done this off season, it's all positive. Like, there's really not been, if you want to nitpick, you would just say that there's still three open scholarships and it's mid-August. Like, that would really be the only nitpick, and that is a really small nitpick because arguably the rotation set, like, unless there's going to be something from way out of left field, whatever they add at this point, it's going to be depth. So, even that's a real tiny nitpick. But, yeah, everything else has been, I've said it before and written it before, but the work that they have done this offseason has been really, really good. And, like, I think this roster, as it's put together right now, is probably, like, from an expectation standpoint, from a preseason standpoint, is second only because we know how the movie played out with Kendrick and DeAndre and Elijah McCadden and Tyler Harris. Like, we know how that – I think Tyler Harris is coming. We know how that movie played out. So I feel like that was probably the best example of roster construction under Penny Hardaway so far. And I think this one's right there with it.
All right, we'll close here. The University of Memphis has a new softball coach. What can you tell us?
Trina Prater. She is coming from Campbell, where she is the reigning BAA Coach of the Year. They've had good success. They missed the NCAA tournament this past season, but she got them there the year before. She was only there two seasons. But she's been at a lot of different places, Iowa, UCF, as an assistant at both those places. She's been a head coach in Buffalo and one other spot that is escaping me. But she seems to recruit well. She seems to get results. She seems to be produce results. This past season at Campbell, they had the Conference Player of the Year, Conference Freshman of the Year, and Conference Pitcher of the Year. We're playing for her, and so that's good. You know, I think it's got the potential to be a good hire, and boy, does that program need it. They won, 14 games over the last two seasons, and she won almost triple that just last season at Campbell. So, I think it's got the potential to be good, and like I said, they needed it. And you know, truth be told, it's Ed Scott's first coaching hire, so I have a feeling he probably went the extra mile to make sure.
Munns, we appreciate it. Enjoy being a golf writer this week.
Yes, all golf, all the time.
Yeah. And enjoy. If you need any help, just you know where to text me.
I will. I probably will. So don't think that won't happen.
All right. That is Jason Munns, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get into the list. We had NFL preseason action. We got the new AP Top 25. We'll tell you where the Tigers rank in that. We've also got more excerpts from the forthcoming Aaron Rodgers biography. We'll discuss all that and more during hour number two. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company on 92.9 FM ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Do that. Let's get into the list.
Jeffrey and company make a list of the biggest stories, both good and bad, that we need to talk about. This is The List.
You just made the list!
Presented by Birdies 901, Memphis's place for virtual golf. The List on 92.9.
The Georgia Bulldogs.
You just made the list.
Yeah, the Georgia Bulldogs are number one in the Associated Press Top 25 preseason college football poll for the second straight season as the Super Conference era begins with the SEC and the Big Ten dominating the top 10 of the rankings. The Bulldogs received 46 first place votes and 1,532 points in the top 25 released Monday, and the SEC powerhouse finished comfortably ahead of number 2 Ohio State, received 15 first place votes and 1,490 points out of the Big Ten. As we welcome back Steve Lennox to the program. Steve, I think the thing that really stood out to me is as you compare the AP top 25 and the coaches poll top 25, 1 through 7 are identical. The top 10 contains, I should say really the top 11 contains the same 11 teams. The one key difference is Michigan is 9 in the AP poll, and they're 8 in the coaches poll. Penn State, 9 in the coaches poll, 8 in the AP poll. But I think the other thing that really stood out to me, each ranking has 25 teams. They're the same 25 teams. No one is ranked in one poll and unranked in the other.
Yeah, since we talked earlier, Jeffrey, I'm trying to figure out what that means. I mean, is it going to be harder to crack the top 25 this year because they're both so similar and all 25 teams that you said are in there?
My first thought is it's not unrelated. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of, I think we have way more people now that are doing top 25 lists. So I think there's a little bit more groupthink than previously before, but I think there's also kind of the idea of, all right, here are the teams that we think are pretty good and we'll adjust accordingly. I actually think it's not going to be harder to crack. To if you're outside looking in, you're just going to have to beat one of these teams.
Yeah, I'm looking at Notre Dame at number 7, and I'm wondering, are they 20 through 25, or are they quicker into the top 5, or are they going to fall out of the top 10 and be in that 20 to 25 range at some point in time? Because you look at the top 10, there are a couple of schools here where it's like, you know, they're going to drop. They're going to have a loss in the first couple of weeks, and all of a sudden it's doomsday and their season is over. Does Notre Dame slowly move up? Or do they quickly drop out somehow, some way?
I mean, I think the reality is for them, we're going to know very quickly because week one they play right. at A&M. If A&M, who's ranked 20th, like you tell me, if A&M wins that game, well, then all of a sudden we're talking about, I think, Notre Dame flipping down. It's really hard to go all the way from 20 to a top 10 team, but like all of a sudden A&M's going to be lifted up very, very quickly. And like to me, like that's kind of a big part of it. It's like we'll see a lot of these teams, like Clemson, who's at 14, well, they play Georgia week one. I mean, that's a chance for a showcase, but at the same time, it's like we kind of think like it's going to go a certain way. I think the other thing that kind of stands out to me about the rankings is the more what we've seen in college football really the last 5 years in particular, but I think it really even goes really back kind of 10 years. There's a difference between a national title contender and someone that's kind of in that 6 to 20 range, because I think a lot of those teams are fairly even. It's just kind of who has a better day. I think what we're starting to see now is like, okay, everybody feels pretty good about Georgia and Ohio State. They think they feel pretty good about Oregon, Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss, but it's like, it feels like to me, everyone feels really good about Georgia and Ohio State, and then they're kind of like, I don't know, we'll see after that.
So Texas for me, and I don't know if I can draw a parallel here in the right way or not, but you know, the NFL team that's always on Hard Knocks, and I get into Hard Knocks, and then I end up paying attention to that team. You know, even if they're not my NFL team,
sure,
I pay attention to them for that year.
That Texas, was the original idea of Hard Knocks, and then football yeah. coaches did what football coaches do, and they get paranoid.
Yes. So Texas, I always sort of look at, I went down, I call it a privilege. When I was at ESPN back in 2019, I went down and did a handful of series on the Longhorn Network
yeah.
for Texas college baseball. So even years later, I now have people I consider friends based on going down there and only meeting them a handful of times. We go back and forth. We have conversations. So I always am checking in on Texas. And I just feel like maybe this is the year that, you know, that we see them. It's been a while, right? Since, I mean, again, they always have that slip up that seems that, you know, all of a sudden they're climbing uphill. Right now they're in the top four. So that to me, as you said, there are a handful of teams right now that you identify that you can see in the national championship game. And the coaches poll and the AP poll says that Texas has a legit shot this year. Not that they haven't had a legit shot in previous years, but this is the year, perhaps, that they're right there.
Well, I think the other thing that's interesting to me about Texas is for so long, we kind of never gave them the benefit of the doubt. But now it feels like I'm worried maybe we're giving them a little bit too much benefit of the doubt because, and I think it, because I've talked about this with my buddy Blake Topmeyer, who joins us on Fridays. He really believes it simply goes back to we can't get out of our head what we saw when Sark took Texas into Tuscaloosa. And while the final score was close, but it's like Texas really beat Alabama at its own game. They really roughed them up. They beat them in a way that we don't see many teams go into Tuscaloosa and win. And they get a lot of mileage out of that because I'm still thinking back to, you know, Texas laid an egg in the national semifinal game. And yes, Washington deserved the right to be in the national championship game. They played unbelievable. They took advantage of Texas's secondary. But like, I just wonder if, you know, we're giving Texas a little bit too much benefit of the doubt because this isn't playing in the Big 12 anymore. You know, you look at their schedule, they've got a weird game week two at Michigan. And while we don't have the highest hopes of Michigan, that's going to be a tough physical game that's going to be on the road. And then you immediately turn around. They've got in October in back-to-back weeks, they've got the Oklahoma game in at the Cotton Bowl, and then they get Georgia at home. Like, it's one of those situations where you're just going to have more opportunities to lay the egg and get punished for it. But with that being said, I think all of us are still kind of looking at Texas in the NIL era. Their roster is just going to be so much better. And I think that's, that's kind of what stands out. When you talk about the top teams, Georgia, NIL rolling, Ohio State, NIL rolling, Oregon, NIL rolling, Texas, NIL rolling, Alabama, still Alabama. Ole Miss, for Ole Miss's standards, they have their NIL program rolling. Like, those are the kind of the things that stand out to me.
Right. They learned how to do it faster than everybody else.
Correct.
Sort of like what we were talking about in the TV world.
Yes.
Earlier, of, you know, they know how to play this system, and they play it well. And yeah, you know, does money buy championships? We see it at the pro level. Now we're going to see it with big time college football, and we've seen it in the past, just not to this degree.
We've seen it in the under the table era. I don't know if we've seen it where it's as out in the open, because I think the thing that's interesting to me is we've not seen a team that has largely avoided high school recruiting and trying to build depth that way go and have success. Are we going to see someone that builds a team entirely through the portal, basically, and is able to get to the top of the mountain? My suspicion is you can kind of buy your way into the playoff. I don't know if you can buy your way into a championship.
Yeah. Because you're going back to the drawing board every single year.
Correct.
Rather than developing your own guys along those ways. And, you know, that 20, 21-year-old kid is, you know, in a lot of situations is going to be, you know, beat out that 18, 19-year-old kid who was on campus for the first time.
Yep.
Just based on their experience. And now you're paying, you know, money's going to dictate to a certain degree. You are going to play, and we've got to see what we have in you until we realize you don't fit here. But we're going to play you based on the amount of money that you're being given. And that's what the frustration level is for coaches. The things that coaches are now dealing with day in and day out, from this point all the way through January, February, on a week-to-week basis, it's so much different than 5 years ago. You know, who's that person that comes in the coach's office and say, hey, you know, it's finally gotten to a problem with this guy, and we've got to deal with it. You know, he's not happy, wants more. They're going into the offices and saying, if I don't get more right now, and I see it, Jeffrey, I do college basketball in the MAC.
Yeah.
Metro Atlantic Athletic, not the other MAC. I know stories. Yes, I know stories. Why isn't this kid playing? And the first thing that you think about nowadays, he went into the office, he asked the coach for more, they said no. They've parted ways in season. And that's what coaches are dealing with. You're going to you've got to get something out of them, because you are paying these guys, and sooner or later there's going to be one of these big time schools that says we don't want to swim at this end of the pool anymore. I don't know where it happens, but this is going to be every single year now going forward, and you're going to go back to those same people who are giving you money, where all of a sudden it's like, we're not getting anything in our return. We're not in the championship game, and it's the Pandora's box, it's open.
No, to your point, the system works for your program if you're winning. When you're winning and everybody's happy, all right, everybody's willing to spend a little bit more. But it just takes that 1 year of kind of being disappointing. Maybe you have a year of bad injury luck, and it just kind of, you know, all of a sudden you go from being a playoff team to you're 7-5. And then you lose about 10 to 15% of your money, and then it just kind of snowballs that way. This is that weird question of, like, I don't know where this is headed, because on the one hand, to your point, asking the same people to fund your roster as the same people that fund all of your programs, your donors, whatnot, that does not seem to me to be a sustainable formula. But it also feels like we're still very far away from even coming up with, like, a structure that makes sense, because even when I see, like, okay, the NCAA is now, they've settled this court case and now they're ready to go to Congress, and it's like, you're still one court case away from being right back where you were. And it just seems to me where I think eventually it's going to have to just collapse completely, and then someone's going to have to say, all right, we've got to build something else out from the ashes. But it seems to me like right now that this is where we're headed, and people are just going to have to figure out how to deal with it. And I, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know where this is headed, because you could tell me this makes it faster to go to some type of power league merger between the Big Ten and the SEC, and then, you know, everyone else is left figuring it out. Or you can tell me, like, hey, man, like, they kind of like where they are. They're not having to be the bad guy. They're able to just keep it rolling. I can see anything in between that. And this is just where it feels like it's one of those things where you can identify that it's a crisis. And I think everyone probably behind closed doors acknowledges that is the case. But it's like, as long as this is how it is, and like we just got to keep rolling with it. It's like, okay, but at a certain point, like the bill's going to come due. And I think that's the real question is, what is the bill? When is it coming due? Will it come due?
Right. And I hate doing this, but I saw something earlier and I didn't click on it to read the whole thing. But understand that the student athletes, as we call them, as we describe them, they want a seat at the table. They're never going to unionize. It's too big.
Well, I mean,
but they want a seat. They don't want just the lawyers making decisions where, okay, go in the corner. We're going to give you a little piece of this. No, they've got to figure out a way where they're in the rooms where these conversations are going on.
Is there a way for them to get in the room without? That's the whole thing. It's like everyone keeps pointing out, like, eventually you got to make them employees. Okay, well, if I'm a player, why would I want to be an employee? I've got it pretty good right now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I have complete agency. Like, if I want to go be a free agent each and every year. And so, like, then you start to get to that question. It's like, you start to realize it is the direct result of, for far too long, the system being completely outdated, no one willing to have any foresight and change things. But it's like, I almost wonder if that has made this even more impossible to deal with.
And what we're going to see as well is coaches are going to say, I no longer want to be a part of this. And you're going to lose quality coaches. We've already done it. I mean, do you think Saban is no longer coaching and on the sideline because this was a big part of it, that this headache was just too big? And you know what? I don't have to deal with this anymore. I can walk away.
I think it's twofold. I think that played a huge part of it. I also think it'll never be admitted, but I also think this was another part of it. I don't think the Alabama football job is as good in this era as it was previously, because
everyone caught up to him, and it had to be changes where, you know, hey, what? You know what? All we have to do is spend the money. We can get the top recruits.
Right.
Now we can catch up to Alabama.
Correct. And you can't just make more rich people in Alabama. You know, if all of a sudden the going rate for a roster, like if the roster costs $5 million to have the best roster in football, well, Alabama could do that pretty easily. But when the best roster costs $20 million a year, well, all of a sudden...
Don't those numbers that you're throwing out there seem awfully low for a roster of, what, now 60-plus? That, you know, and I'm...
I would say it, seems this, like, I would say it in this way. It might be low if you were, like, if you were mapping out everybody on the roster, like, for the value of potentially how long they're going to be there. But this is the other thing that you're starting to realize. I may tell a kid, hey, you know, we're going to give you $1 million a year for 4 years. What people have now started to do is everyone's just focusing on paying the roster for this year. And then you figure it out. That means some guys are going to get, you know, some guys will get left, whatnot. It seems to me that the number's probably close to that. If you do it, if you think about it in the terms of what you owe for the fall, that would make sense to me. If you're talking about potentially what you owe everyone on campus, no, you're 100% right that number's way lower. But if we're talking about what you owe to a team for the fall, I can buy that number.
If a kid leaves a school, do they have to give the money back? Because you know that money, I mean, you're not talking $1 million for every kid, but, you know, say they get $75,000 for the year. They're spending that money. Their family's probably spending that money. Does that money have to be recouped somehow?
I mean, a lot of this depends on the language of
what... If you wanted to be vindictive towards a family?
Yeah, and the problem is no one really wants to get into that game. So it depends on what type of agreement was signed with the collective. But you kind of get into the game of no one really wants to go after that because of the PR hit, and you're all trying to recruit the next kid. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like you're letting that person go. And so why would I make this a public thing? Because that's kind of what we saw with Jalen Rashada, who left Florida. Now he's at Georgia, and he's suing Florida for recruit promises. It's kind of the reverse of what you're talking about, but it's the same. It's in that same vein. And everyone is – no one really wants to be a part of that.
There's a line Jeffrey, that I absolutely hate, whether it's in real life or a movie. When somebody says, wait till I get my lawyer involved in this.
Correct.
Wait till you hear.
You'll be hearing from my attorney.
That's probably not. You're going to hear from my lawyer. Well, I've got to go find a lawyer for most of us. But these families of these athletes, they need somebody. They have to have somebody. They have to have a lawyer.
Oh, I mean.
Right.
I mean, that's the other thing. Well, then the question is, wait till you hear from my agent. I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, okay, there's lawyers, there's agents. Some can function as both, but I mean that's kind of the other thing. I keep wondering if there's going to be a school that sits there and goes, hey, instead of paying our coaching staff $60 million a year, what if we pay our coaching staff $40 million a year and we take that other $20 million and we put it into the roster? And because right now coaches will be kind of crotchety and they'll gripe a little bit, but since it's not cutting into their money, they're kind of going along with it. I'm curious to know what happens if coaches' salaries get, like, if it becomes like the NFL where, hey, you know, we can either pay our coaching staff this or we can put it into the team. And most people make the decision of putting into the team. I'm curious to know if a school decides we're going to be the one that goes and does that first. Because if it works, then you're going to see everybody starting to do it. And then I think if it doesn't work, then everyone will see this is why you got to pay the top-end coaches. And maybe it gets even worse and you got to start paying more and more. But at a certain point, like, it's not just unlimited money. Like, the money has to come from somewhere. It has to go somewhere. Like, those are kind of the questions that I consider.
And the vicious cycles continue where, you know, you've got to use student athlete, but it goes to their families as well, one way or another. They're still going to be taken advantage of. Even if they have money coming in, they're still, you know, hey, we're now paying you. We want more. Are they capable of more? And there's going to be a lot more sad stories. Like you just said, you know, I'm going to another SEC school, but I'm going to now sue my former school. We're going to read it. It's going to become daily.
Oh,
and
yes.
it's going to be, you know, every single day, just like with these holdouts now, or, you know, it's almost Groundhog Day with the NFL. You know, Ayuk wants out of San Francisco. Now we're seeing that Reddick wants out of the Jets and all these different things. These storylines, it's just change the name, change the team. But they're basically the same storyline every year. And we're going to see these storylines in college football, college athletics going forward. And they're not going to be pretty.
Let's talk about those topics that Steve just brought up. Of course, we got Hassan Reddick requesting a trade. Ayuk potentially working on going back to the Niners. We also had action from the weekend. We got our first look at some of the new quarterbacks. Let's go around the NFL. We're going to do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Let's start with it before we get into the action from the weekend. Steve, I feel like I do this cycle now with news stories pretty much on the regular, where let's start with Brandon Ayuk. So I have mentioned on the program, one of my new pet peeves is it feels like in today's media climate, we take news that we already knew and repackage it and use it again. For instance, when it was announced that Brandon Ayuk requested a trade, it's like, okay, we knew when he scrubbed his internet, his agent said he wants to be traded. Like, we knew it. Like, it just gets repackaged. But the other thing that's been confusing to me is, okay, when we first find out that Brandon Ayuk officially requests a trade, almost everyone that follows the NFL had the same reaction. That's all well and good, but he's going to be back with the Niners. He's under contract. No one's going to be able to find a deal that satisfies all parties, and then that's where we're headed. And now we've got Adam Schefter reporting that Ayuk has gone back to the Niners and they're working through potentially re-signing if they have to do the Saquon move where you move a little bit of money, but he's going to be a free agent next year. Regardless, we're back to exactly where we kind of thought we were, which is Ayuk's going to be playing for the Niners this year. Beyond that, who knows? Well,
Everyone deals with the headaches in the moment as, you know, you always just wish, you know, I'm sure for these teams, like, well, our guy's going to happen eventually. One of our guys is going to be going to be in the same situation.
Correct. I'm a Giants fan. It's like, I knew eventually this was going to happen with Saquon. It's like, when you make the decision to pay Daniel Jones and you don't pay Saquon, it's like eventually you're going to deal with that. Lo and behold, the exact same thing, and now Saquon's playing for the Eagles. But the thing that's
so our first show together, can I real quick? How are you? I know your audience probably knows how you're a Giants fan, but how are you a Giants fan?
So essentially where it started out, if you're in Memphis, there's not really a clear NFL team. So forever Memphis through FedEx was trying to get an NFL team. When the NFL announced they were going to expand with the Panthers and the Jaguars, Charlotte and Jacksonville decided to build brand new stadiums. We put some new skyboxes on our stadium that was like 40 years old, and we're like, good, done. And we didn't get a team. Then when the Titans or the Oilers announced that they're moving to Nashville, they played here in Memphis for a year, and that didn't go well. So that was never really an option for me. And so the Giants always had jerseys that I liked, and it was always a team that you could consume pretty easily because you knew the Giants were going to be on. And then Eli Manning was my favorite player growing up. And then once Eli got drafted by them, that became my team. And I've stuck with him even after getting rid of Eli. But it's been tough because I think that the Maras and the Tishes fly under the radar for being bad owners. But like when you look at the body of work, it's not great. Yet everyone just keeps lifting them up, and I guess it just shows like the power of like a room. It's like these are New York royalty. But the long story short is like one of my favorite players got drafted by them, and then I just pivoted to them because I needed an NFL team.
All that makes sense. Thank you.
And so, you know, to me, though, the thing that's been interesting is you get to last week, and I had long held the position of like, I think Ayuk's still going to be with the Niners. And then you start to hear it's like, no, you get the reports out of San Francisco that, hey, they're basically saying, we've got a deal and done. Send us your final offers. And you're like, I guess they are going to get rid of him. Players and coaches started talking about him in the past tense. And yet, we found our way back to it was a circuitous route, but we found our way back to the obvious answer. And that brings up the other news of the day with your Jets. Hassan Reddick requests a trade. And I'm just sitting there going like, are we always just going to keep giving oxygen to these stories? Because it still feels like we're going to be in the exact same spot. Hassan Reddick's not going to be happy with his contract, but he's going to be a Jet. He's under contract.
As the world turns in the NFL, I don't understand the Jet situation right now. They make a trade for him. They add him. They're excited about it. Huff ends up, you know, bye-bye. Built himself up and gets to go and gets a payday. I would have just assumed keep him with the money.
But by the way, Memphis Tiger.
What's that?
He's a Memphis Tiger.
Yes. I did know that.
Yeah.
I just forgot it. Hired guns. You know, there's a window. And again, as we're talking about these things, we go down cliche lane of, you know, he wants to be paid now because this is the time where he can get it. But the Ayuk one, it's like, you know what? We might have had a trade for you, but all of a sudden, does he realize, you know, maybe other teams aren't as enamored with him? Does it strike the ego at all that says, you know, hey, we tried to make deals for you. Nobody was willing to give us what we wanted, and they weren't going to give you what you wanted either. Again, not knowing how those things have played out over the last couple of weeks, but does it actually ever work well? If the Patriots had made a trade with the 49ers, Patriots that's not going to make them better this year necessarily. Maybe they go after him next year, or there's other options out there for next year. But when the Patriots were a team involved, I'm like, well, what is that going to do? That doesn't propel them. That doesn't take them. You know, do we have wins above replacement in the NFL? You know, I don't know that he was going to necessarily be in, you know, elevate the Patriots that much more from the receiver position, from the offense position, and from their young quarterback position.
I guess if you made me like come up with an example, maybe when the Eagles traded for AJ Brown, it worked that year, but then it felt like we got right back to it. As soon as they were going to have to pay Jalen Hurts, you're going to come back to the exact same issue that you're with. It's like it can work if you've got a young quarterback that you believe in and you're trying to take advantage, push the chips in, but there always comes to a point, it's like you can't pay everybody. And
right.
And with AJ, like, yes, it worked the year that got him to the Super Bowl, and AJ still had a good year last year, but like, I think, though, you make an interesting point with Ayuk, because I've always struggled with Shanahan receivers, where with Ayuk, how much of it is Brandon Ayuk versus how much of it is he's playing in a great system with other great players, right, and therefore he gets favorable matchups, and he's got a coach that's very good at scheming him wide open. That's what I've always struggled with, because the thing that I can't get out of my head, and I'm sure this is probably unfair to Ayuk, but man, that Super Bowl performance where Kansas City is one of the few teams last year that could really man up receivers and get physical with them, like Ayuk just didn't really do very much. And like, I know that's kind of recency bias, prisoner of the moment, but I always just feel like the same way with Shanahan. It's that I think you have to have a certain player, like, not, he can't just take replacement level receiver, using your example, and turn him into all pro. But like, I do think that he can turn a lot of receivers into all pro, but maybe not just like, he can't just go find anyone off the street. And I think that's kind of the problem that Ayuk has. You see all these receivers last year getting paid. Obviously he wants to get paid, but like, if you're making me pick of, if I've got generic team, would I rather have Amon-Ra St. Brown or Ayuk? I think I'd rather have Amon-Ra. And I think he kind of fell into that. He fell into that trap of, I want my money, everybody's getting their money, I got better numbers. But that's not exactly how it works. You know what I mean?
Right. And then, and as you identified, the team right now identifies you as this and this only. Our money, we've identified the guy who is above you, and that's where our money probably ends up going. And again, he takes, you know, a shot to the ego, perhaps, of, you know, hey, this team doesn't want me, I've got to go get my money. So if it's not here, it's got to be somewhere else.
Well, and to your point, I think also there's probably a little bit of panic also, knowing, hey, they're going to have to pay Purdy next year, because Purdy wasn't a first rounder. He's going to be getting his money a year earlier. And it's like, I'm fascinated,
right,
to see.
But what is his price tag?
I have no idea. Because if you told me, I know the quarterback spot is that ultimate of, if you've got one, even if like you don't think he's the world's greatest, but if you got him, you got to keep him. If you told me there's one franchise that's going to be a little bit quarterback agnostic, you could talk me into the Niners. But at the same time, it seems like Shanahan believes that Brock Purdy is more than just system guy. But I mean, what on, like, are you really going to sit there and pay him? What, the going rate right now is like $55 million. Is he going to get that?
Oh, man. I mentioned the name for the NBA earlier. Gordon Hayward getting what he got. It didn't make him a better player. Didn't make him an elite player. He was just paid at an elite level.
Some of this is just a matter of timing. Is your contract up when the cap goes up?
And you mentioned with his contract, it's a year earlier. I mean, so advantage to his agency.
We also got to look at some of the other young quarterbacks from this weekend. I think the big takeaway that I had from this weekend was we had six guys go in the first round. If you're a team with all six of those guys, I think you left the weekend feeling pretty good, with the obvious caveat, it's preseason football. Who knows? Like, trying to make sense of it, who knows which teams got the starters going up against the number two defense? Like, I don't know, but if I'm just rooting for said team, I feel pretty good. I mean, if I'm a Bears fan, I'm feeling really good, because I thought Caleb, I think Caleb fell into this category of, we knew he was going to be the number one pick for so long. We started nitpicking him and looking for things to go up against him. And he's obviously got this certainly strong personality, whatnot. But if you just watched him on the football field, it's like, oh, yeah, it's kind of a reminder. The guy's pretty darn good. I thought Jalen Daniels looked really good. Drake May was kind of in a bad spot. The weather was bad on Thursday. No one was really doing anything. It felt like both teams were just trying to get the heck out of there. But I didn't see anything that was alarming. Then you move to Penix. I thought Penix looked pretty darn good. I thought Bo Nix looked pretty good. And, I mean, even J.J. McCarthy I thought looked pretty good. To me, like, that was kind of the big takeaway, was if you had a young quarterback this weekend, I didn't see anyone that would have reason to hit the panic button.
Yes, but all I could think about all weekend long, and watching some highlights, I saw some of the Commanders game. And, you know, you say you're a Giants fan, and how, it's going to take some getting used to that the Commanders are coming.
you're taking away my I've got two buddies that are Commanders fans, and I text during the draft, it really hit me. It's like, oh, they're not incompetent anymore. And I was like, it was depressing. It was like, as much as like I hate the way the Giants are run, like I could always just be like, well, at least we're not the Commanders.
Right.
And now it's like,
there's another level of ineptness out there.
Yes, and it's like, oh, God, we don't even have them to look at anymore. That was depressing. I think the other thing that really stood out was, I cannot explain this, but Stetson Bennett yesterday, who's largely just vying for the backup quarterback job for the Rams until Jimmy G is done with his suspension, I've never seen someone that I had so little faith in. He's throwing picks all over the place. He looks terrible. He got the ball back in the fourth corner. He's like, hey, he's going to go score and they're going to win. I cannot explain that one way or the other, but that was how I felt the entire time. And lo and behold, like, fourth down, rolling to his left. Looks like he's completely in jail. Looks like he's just going to run out of bounds. Sidearm flicks it, and sure enough, there's a guy in the end zone. That was one of the more peak, you're watching preseason football, I have no explanation for what just happened.
And the guys on the defensive side of the football there, what are they doing in a month?
I assume they're looking for whether or not the UFL is going to be taking more games.
Right.
Yeah.
So the four interceptions, if this was a regular season game and we're talking on a Monday about the Cowboys, four interceptions and 3 points, one field goal on the other side for the Cowboys. But you know, for me right now, you mentioned the number, Jeffrey, six quarterbacks, right?
Yep.
The percentages for me nowadays are four and a half of those, you know, four quarterbacks out of that draft class are not going to have successful careers.
Yeah.
The NFL, to me,
I think we're getting I think we're getting a little better at it, but the odds are still probably either 50-50 or slightly above 50-50. So if you hit on,
I just don't think. Yeah. They're not, you know, I saw Marcus Mariota, you know, with the Commanders. You know, there he is, another team, 10 years in the NFL. He was the, you know, Marcus Mariota is going to lead us to a Super Bowl. Well, you know, he's on his fifth team now. He was with the Eagles last year, now with the Commanders. And you never want to see Marcus Mariota, right?
No.
Unless you never want to see him. You never want to see Trey Lance.
That was my other takeaway. Trey Lance better get very comfortable holding a clipboard.
But it's you know, these they come. I don't know if it's the team, it's the systems, or, you know, Zach Wilson, for me, where was it? You know, he showed glimpses, but he also showed a lot of immaturity. The best thing I can say about Caleb Williams right now, watching this from afar and probably further out than most people who are afar. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I haven't heard his name outside of he played in the first preseason game. There hasn't been that extra stuff going on with Caleb Williams away from the field. We haven't heard that stuff. That tells me, okay, I want to pay attention to him. Hey, I'm rooting for him. Not a Bears fan, but I'm rooting for him because it's been nothing but everything else around Caleb Williams while he was at USC.
No,
let him go in there, let him be a quarterback, and I'm glad I haven't really heard his name to this point.
All right, Dennis, can we hit the music? Because I think we end up going a little bit long here. So we have, Steve, we always end the whole mantra, the whole ethos of our program is we don't tell the story, we tell our story. I learned about it in a marketing class, and really it just goes perfect for this day and age that we're in sports because everyone basically always just tells their story rather than what actually happened. I think for today's Tell Your Story, I would like to go to American sprinter Noah Lyles because this was one of the more interesting subplots we had over the weekend. Noah Lyles was offended when Adidas invited him to an Anthony Edwards event last year. You want me to do what? You want to invite me to an event for a man who's not even been to an NBA Finals in a sport that you don't even care about, and you're giving him a shoe? He then proceeded to say there were rumors going around the internet that indeed he may have said these things. That's not true. Steve, he just had... He had competing conflicts. That's the only reason why I didn't go to the event. Competing conflicts. That is the ultimate definition of don't tell the story, tell your story. Steve,
you gotta control your story.
You gotta control the story. That is it. Steve, we appreciate it, buddy. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Thanks, sir.
That is Steve Lennox again. Lennox on Baseball for Twitter. Go like, follow, subscribe, do all of that. When we, I should say, want to thank Jason Munns for joining the program. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, for Steve, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.